Honey, why can't I download any more series?
Dad, my game just bombed.
Daddy, I was speaking to Kevin and my call just cut out.
With uncapped Vox fiber to the home, reaching your cap is a thing of the past. You can have all your devices connected all the time. Get unlimited browsing, unlimited calling, and unlimited entertainment. Vox fiber. Now uncapped. T's and C's apply. For more information, visit vox.co.za.
I'm Richard van der Berg.
And I'm Duncan MacLeod.
This is Talk Central, episode 168, for the weekend starting 24 February 2017.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central, the home of South Africa's best technology journalism.
On Talk Central this week, MWC 27 preview.
Also this week, DStv is hiking its prices, the Snapchat IPO, and ZarX, the new exchange, goes live.
Time to boldly go where no podcast has gone before.
Well, welcome to the show. How's it, Rafa?
How's it, Duncan?
Very good, thanks. Before we boldly go, we know podcast has gone before, shall we get into our quiz?
Let's do that. The first question in this week's quiz. Dark Fiber Africa's subsidiary Squidnet has switched on its Network of Things network in Gauteng. It is using technology from which French company?
Our second question. MultiChoice has expanded access to its DStv Now online streaming platform or service. Which DStv subscribers can now access it?
The third question, how many Earth-sized planets have been discovered orbiting a nearby star? And for a bonus point, what is the system called?
That's a cool story. Fourth question, who is stepping down this month as chairman of Ultron, marking the end of an era?
And the last question, ZarX, a new technology-based stock exchange, has been launched in South Africa. Which company was the first to list on the exchange?
That's our quiz. We'll get to the answers to those at the end of the show, but right now we're going to get into the week's news. No, in fact, before we get into the week's news, I want to hear all about Reunion. You've just got back from the tropical island.
Oh, yeah.
Tell me about it.
It feels a bit surreal to be back, but yeah, Reunion Island, what a fantastic place. I mean, it's the best way to describe it is tropical France. Everybody speaks French. It's got a French flair on every street corner. It's absolutely incredible. Tropical beaches, Swiss-like villages in the mountains. We did a mountain hike up to one of the highest points. It's fantastic. I cannot recommend it highly enough if you like that kind of thing. And it's only 4 hours away from Joburg in terms of a flight. So, I had so much fun.
It's quite pricey, though, isn't it?
It wasn't too expensive. I mean, obviously, everything's in euros. So I mean, you probably pay between 15 and 20 euros a meal. Beer, probably 3 to 6 euro, depending on what you go for. So you can do it on a budget, which we did. And we done all the things that we wanted to do, apart from the more lavish kind of helicopter rides and those kind of things. But to be honest with you, just going for the beaches, going for the mountains, seeing the sights and driving around the island, it is absolutely fascinating. And it was a great holiday. But it's good to be back.
Most important question: forget about the beaches and the sun and the beer and the beauty of it. How was the internet there?
Yeah, look, the Wi-Fi hotspots we used, some of them were good, some of them were bad, but on average about 10 megs, I reckon.
Not bad at all.
Yeah, it wasn't bad. We did manage to do most of the things. I did a live stream, Facebook live stream, which seemed to work well on the beach. So, I mean, it's kind of close to one of the fiber links going down, so I'm not sure if they do tap into that, but for a high-end DSL, it's...
They did build a subsea cable there. I think it's called Lion. It connects all those Indian Ocean islands.
Probably, yeah.
So I think they've recently actually gotten decent connectivity on those tropical islands in the Indian Ocean.
I was exposed to kind of public hotspots. I didn't really get any. We did visit one house, some people that we met, and the speed that I tried there was, I think, just under 20 megs.
Oh.
And it was pretty good.
Reasonable.
Hotspots, like I said, was probably 8 to 10 megs on a depending on how busy it was and how far we were. Nothing close to our beautiful fiber we've got here, obviously. But I'm sure you can get that kind of thing there.
And did you take your drone with you?
Unfortunately not. Oh, it's in for repairs. Yeah,
oh,
it was
no.
a bit of a what app happened? Failure. I was testing a new app called Litchi, and I was trying to do – I use it for 360 photographs. And for some reason, the app crashed and – well, the app shut down, basically. Lost communication with the drone and just landed. Sadly, it landed. landed on some harsh terrain and the camera broke. So
it's
fixed now, but too late unfortunately, for the island. Yeah, I was very upset about that.
I'm sure, because you must have been able to get some amazing footage.
Oh, man, it would have been incredible to shoot there. Yeah. I got some great underwater shots. I mean, the tropical snorkeling. The snorkeling is beautiful there. I mean, there's a lot of great fish, a lot of gullies, a lot of coral reefs. It was fantastic.
Sounds great. I think I'll have to go there at some point. It's between that and the Seychelles, I think.
Look, it's a lot more rural. I haven't been to the other islands, but as my first time to one of those tropical islands, it's not very commercial. It is the real island, and the people are incredibly friendly. We met three or four people who helped us from lifts from the airport randomly to invite them to stay with at the house, taking us out for dinner if we ever come back there, that kind of thing.
That's fantastic.
It was a really good experience.
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. So, staying with the travel theme, there's a little conference starting in Barcelona this Sunday. You might have heard of it. It's called Mobile World Congress.
Yeah, I've even been there a few times, but not the most fun you can have in Spain, I'm sure.
No. I must say, the last time I was there, which must be coming up for 3 years ago now, it's chaos. It's complete chaos. And I'm very glad to not be going this year. I think it's a show you need to go to every 3 years or so. But more frequently than that, I think it's going to age you prematurely trying to get to all the press conferences and trying to see everything. The last time I was there, I actually only managed to see one hall out of seven.
No, it is crazy. Unless you need to cover every beat that's there and then really be the eyes and ears on the ground, you can pick up most of the news from really credible sources.
Yes,
remotely. You can watch most of the streams.
That's my thinking behind it as well. I mean, on Sunday, it's a bit like the CES event in Las Vegas as well. A lot of the big keynotes, the big important press conferences happen the day before the show opens. And that's certainly the case this year. We're going to be seeing the big press conferences from the likes of LG and Samsung and HTC and even Nokia.
Even Nokia.
On Sunday afternoons. So we're looking
forward to Sunday afternoon TV watching, really.
Indeed. Have to attend a press conference on Sunday lunchtime. Telkom is making some announcements. Which I believe are going to be quite interesting. But I'll be coming rushing home after the Telkom press conference to start watching keynotes.
No doubt streaming it in your car on the way back already.
Probably.
Don't you love this connected world we live in?
Oh, indeed. Yeah, I'll try my best not to watch the keynotes while I'm driving. But I must say, it's a much more peaceful and less stressful way of consuming Mobile World Congress is to do it from the comfort of my own couch, watching the keynotes on television.
Hopefully with a beer in hand, I guess.
Yeah, indeed. Best or only way to do it. Anyway, we're going to talk a bit about Mobile World Congress because it is one of the big trade shows of the year, probably on a CES sort of level in terms of product announcements. And we're expecting lots of new smartphones to be announced. There's one notable absence, obviously apart from Apple, at Mobile World Congress this year in terms of a new flagship smartphone, and that is Samsung, who have made it quite clear that they will not be launching the Galaxy S8 at MWC. They've launched every other Galaxy S smartphone in Barcelona, but this year they're going to do it about a month later is the rumor. The talk is that the phone is going to go on sale, at least in some markets, at the end of April. So I presume the press conference for the S8 the rumors is it's going to happen in New York sometime in March.
Nice.
I've said in previous episodes of Talk Central that I think it's the device I'm most excited about this year, just because of the fact that Samsung has had such a terrible 2016 with the Galaxy Note 7 that they need to pull the rabbit out of the hat this time around.
Yeah. And can you believe that they're still warning people on flights about that phone? It's incredible. I saw it every time we boarded a plane.
Oh, really? That's interesting.
But, I agree with you. They've got a lot to prove, and Samsung won't get it wrong. I mean, they can't. They can't afford to.
Yeah.
And also moving away from a Mobile World Congress for the announcement, I think, gives them more leeway to do it in their own terms.
Indeed, less other noise around the announcement. That is true. We already know a lot, thanks to leaks, about what the Galaxy S8 is actually going to look like. It appears from all the speculation and talk that there are going to be two models, the S8 and the S8 Plus. The S8, both models, it appears, are going to have the latest Snapdragon 835 processor. The talk is that the base models, they'll start at 64 gigabytes of storage.
Good.
Which I think is a must-do in this day and age. Mm. I think Apple still sells a 16 gig iPhone, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, my wife's got a 16 gig, and it's impossible to keep that thing, to keep more than a few megs available. I mean, you have to install so many apps and photos and things.
Yeah.
Can't use 16 gigs anymore.
64 is the right approach. So two screen sizes, both big, 5.8 inch and 6.2 inch. So that's a big step up from the current models, if I'm not mistaken. But the bezel is going to be a lot thinner. They're doing away with the home button, according to the speculation. The fingerprint scanner is either going to be on the back, which I don't think is the best place for a fingerprint scanner, or it's going to be embedded under the glass on the front of the device.
Well, that'll be a much better proposition.
If they can get it right.
Yeah.
I suspect that we're hearing different rumors because it's not clear whether Samsung has been able to crack the technology at this point.
Hmm. Interesting
the stuff. Rumor is that the new iPhone is going to have something similar as well. But it looks, from the pictures I've seen, the leaked images of the S8, it looks like an amazing device. Very little bezel on it. It's mostly screen, so that increased screen size at 5.8 inch, I think, is probably not going to increase the size of the phone very much, if at all. Although the 6.2 inch model is really, I mean, that's in phablet territory.
Oh, yeah, and we know that Samsung does phablets so very well.
Yes,
but they actually do. I mean, they've got some of the best phablets out there, or at least small tablets.
Well, the reviews the Note 7 got before it started exploding were really good, powerful. Mm. I mean, the people were saying this is the smartphone of the year. So, two models make sense because they haven't had a replacement for the Galaxy Note 5. There was no Note 6, if I recall correctly. They're obviously plugging a gap here. Those who were looking to buy the Note 7 but couldn't because it was withdrawn are probably going to look at the 6.2-inch S8 Plus. These phones no doubt will be running Android Nougat, or Nougat, as the Americans say. Possibly Android 7.1, which is the version that's running on... Pixel phones.
Yeah, Pixel phone.
Which I really wish would come to South Africa because I'm looking to upgrade my phone this year and I'll probably lean to the S8, but if I had a choice, I'd probably get a Pixel.
Yeah, if it ever comes here, I guess support will be another issue. We don't have the Orange store anymore, we can't even get early access.
No, that is very frustrating that the Orange store isn't around anymore because that was my default place to buy phones.
But I do think you can't go wrong with Samsung this year. They're probably going to have the phone of the year, or at least in the top two position, without a doubt.
Oh, yeah, it's early in the year still, but it's a two-way fight between Apple and Samsung, as it was last year, I suppose.
It'll be interesting to see if they do anything within the augmented reality space, potentially, virtual
I've
reality.
I've heard much about that in the speculation, and I was trawling through all the sites yesterday looking at the speculation. It seems like one of the big selling points is this is going to be able to double, this phone is going to double as a PC.
It's got enough processing power to handle all these things. So for them, it'd probably just been a matter of switching on some features if they do want to release it.
Does Samsung even play in the AR space? I thought they were more VR focused.
Yeah, they do have VR with their Gear headset, and they've got a 360 camera. It will be silly of them not to explore that because I think the two will definitely go hand in hand.
Yeah.
Some applications will call for VR, some will call for AR.
Yeah.
But the phone, if it's got the right sensors built in, they should be able to do it. They should be able to, to make use of those features, even if it's just a switch on at a later stage.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's no doubt that they'll be punting the VR headsets with this phone, and they did that with the Galaxy S6 and the S7.
Oh yeah.
We'll probably see a new version of the headset announced at the same time.
Yeah.
But it's not all about Samsung at Mobile World, of course. Actually, at Mobile World, it's not really about Samsung at all. It's about the smaller Android manufacturers, and we're expecting some interesting stuff. Sony, for example, is anticipated to announce the X2. I was a bit underwhelmed by the original X. I thought Sony... we mentioned this in the last podcast we recorded 2 weeks ago, that Sony seems to have lost the plot a bit in terms of where it's trying to position its phones. It had the Z, which was a very popular lineup, and then it scrapped it, and then it introduced the X, which was kind of a replacement for the Z, but it wasn't really because it wasn't as high end, and then they introduced the XZ, which was the new flagship.
Kind of directionless.
It was kind of weird.
What you see from someone.
I've played with the Xperia X, and it's not as powerful as the Z, and it had a smaller screen, and altogether it felt a little bit underwhelming. It had the Sony characteristics, the really well tuned version of Android that they've got, which I really like a lot. It's slick. It looks like something Apple would produce. It's not something you get from one of the Chinese manufacturers where it looks like it's all been slapped together. They've clearly put a lot of thought into it and into the updates process, into the icons, into the whole look and feel of it, which is something I think Sony does very well. But the Xperia X, I don't know, it kind of missed the target for me. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do with the X2 and how they differentiate it from the XZ, which is their flagship.
And you would think a company like Sony would really go after this AR/VR space. And again, I'm talking about this because it's going to be a massive part of this mobile industry, this technology. We know Sony for their media devices, or for their media license, or the ownership of the licensed media that they've got.
Mm.
Let's hope they really do something spectacular with that this time around.
Yeah, I'm not. I wouldn't hold out too much hope for that.
Yeah, no, we haven't seen it for a while.
No. They seem to be more interested in selling accessories that complement the phone, like the Xperia Ear and similar sort of devices.
But they've always been big on that. You know, buy a camera from them, you'd have a range of accessories, obviously at very high prices, but that's not what it's all about.
Yeah, I mean, I hope Sony really wows this year, because, I don't know, the last year it's kind of felt that they've been drifting a bit. And I think they're an important competitor in the smartphone market. Not everyone likes Samsung. Not everyone likes TouchWiz, their implementation of Android. In fact, a lot of people actively dislike TouchWiz. It's one of the reasons I haven't used a Samsung device in years. And one of the reasons I'd be nervous about going back to the platform, to be quite honest, although I believe it has advanced massively since I last used a Samsung device, which was with the Galaxy S4.
And you still can't remove TouchWiz?
No. Well, you can root them. Well, I suppose you can root it and put a custom ROM on it. Although I've always struggled a bit with custom ROMs on Galaxy devices. My Galaxy S4 has long been rooted, but I haven't been able to get CyanogenMod to run nicely on it.
Also, it's not something that the consumers can really do. So you can argue it's just for the geeks of us us out there.
Oh yeah, I know. No, the vast majority of people would never root their device and install a custom ROM. Let's be honest.
Isn't that the dream we all had for Android when it was first announced? Blank phones, essentially, with the ability for you to update to any operating system.
I'm surprised that Microsoft didn't push that more. They really could have. They could have, and they should have, I think, opened up that Android market to Windows Phone. Because wouldn't you love to take your old Android phone and install Windows Phone on it as a project?
Yeah, definitely. Imagine the kind of thing developers could have done if they started playing with it.
And that's how you get people excited about a platform. But they never really did it. There was a rumor that they were going to do it, that they were going to open it up and make it easy and provide the tools to be able to reach your Android phone and put Windows on it. But they never really did it.
I wonder if there are licensing issues where one party kind of doesn't want to offer licenses for operating system if it can't be guaranteed that that license will be installed on a phone, potentially.
I don't know. Possibly. I mean, with Microsoft, it's almost always a licensing issue. But it's not like they were worried about losing revenue from license fees, because they give away that software to the manufacturers anyway. They changed their model years ago to similar to what Google does with Android. They just give the software away. I think it's on any device that's got smaller than a 11-inch or a 12-inch screen.
Oh yes,
it's free.
Interesting.
Hmm.
Well,
didn't really work for them. Right?
Yeah.
I think they Microsoft came to market with that reinvented Windows Phone platform, or Windows Mobile, whatever it's called. I don't know what it's called now. I think it's Windows Mobile. They came to market with it too late. Windows 10 came too late to mobile, which was Android had won already.
And they had really good hardware. It's a pity. Mm. HTC also said they're going to be launching something, or yeah, rumored to be launching something.
So the obvious one, I suppose, is the HTC 11.
Mm-hmm.
HTC, I love HTC's phones, but they're absolutely useless at marketing them.
Yeah, I've got a love-hate relationship with that company. I did some work with them many years ago, and they had great phones, but it's such a difficult company to deal with. And I don't quite know what their direction is. Still don't. Didn't know, and I still quite don't know. But they've got some of the best hardware out there. I mean, we've known that for a long time.
They do.
Their devices are generally top notch,
and they make the Pixel for Google.
Yeah. Yeah.
And every HTC phone I've had, but my first Android phone was an HTC phone, HTC Desire.
I love that phone.
I mean, it's completely underpowered and useless now, but back then it was state of the art. It was that and the iPhone, basically. You could choose from. But HTC, they've got great engineers. They produce great software. They produce great hardware. But when it comes to, certainly in the South African market, when it comes to actually supporting them and getting them in the hands of consumers and marketing them and creating that distribution network, Samsung runs rings around them.
Oh, partly with bigger budgets, and people seem to want bigger ranges, although everybody, you know, all the manufacturers try and move away from bigger ranges, you know. But the HTC is said to have an HDH screen, which I think would be quite interesting. With a Snapdragon 835 chipset and 12 megapixel camera.
Sounds like the same spec as the Samsung. Yeah.
With eight gigs of RAM, 256 gigabyte of storage.
8 gig of RAM.
8 gigs of RAM.
Good
grief. So it's potentially. I mean, again, you can. If you look at what HTC's done with the Vive, their augmented reality VR or solution. You know, they'll be silly to not have a device that's geared or at least powered for that kind of
technology. 8 gig of RAM. Good grief. And the screen size, is there any speculation about screen size?
No, it doesn't say QHD. What is that? 5.5 inch.
5.5. Okay, so that's increasing as well. I think it's time, because I found the HTC phones, the screen sizes have become a bit small. I've got an HTC One M9, and I was using it the other day, and it's a bit small. The screen's a bit small. 5.5 is a sweet spot, I think. I'm quite keen to see this 5.8 inch Samsung. Because, I mean, you get used to bigger phones, and I think that the manufacturers almost have to creep up slowly. You can't jump from a certain size to a much bigger size, but I think consumers get used to a bigger size. I've been using the Moto Z or Moto Z smartphone, which is a 5.5 inch screen, and when I first started using it, I thought, gee, this is a bit on the large side. Now I find it's a little bit, maybe it's getting a little small.
And we were making fun of phablets at one stage, do you remember?
Yes.
But it's true. I mean, I guess media consumption now, the way that you consume things, you know, if it fits in your pocket relatively comfortably, we all used to be scared of bigger devices because they seem to be so impractical, but the design of them is so good now. They're really solid devices.
You're right. It's because the bezels are getting smaller and smaller that the screen size can creep up. Because
it doesn't feel like a tablet.
The actual phone size is not that much bigger.
So
the screen size might have gone from 5 inch to 5.5 inch, but the phone itself hasn't gone up by half an inch. It's maybe gone up by a third of that.
Exactly. And now that you've got enough power to really drive really interesting applications and built-in features.
Yeah.
It's great to have.
Who else is announcing? Huawei, of course, is going to be there, and that they're doing
P10.
The P10. They've been making some really, really nice phones lately, actually. The new Huawei Mate 9 smartphone is beautiful. I do find they mimic iOS a bit too much for my liking. I don't think they need to do that. They get rid of the app drawer. A lot of the icons look very iOS-ish.
I think they're tapping into a market that they really want to compete with, especially in the China market, with such a big, important.
That's true.
Just as people are speaking, maybe they're listening to the customer feedback.
But fantastic phones. I mean, there was a point where Huawei was a poor second cousin to Samsung and Sony. Not anymore.
No, they are they're definitely top rated. You can compare them quite easily to the other top brands.
And the P10, I mean, I haven't read much speculation. I don't know if you've got any rumors in front of you there and on your computer, Richard, but I'm sure it's going to be a top spec device comparable to the others.
Yeah, no, definitely. It says 5.5-inch curved QHD screen. Curved, it could be interesting. Metal body, fingerprint scanner, dual lens camera, potentially 6 gigabytes of RAM, and 256 gigabytes of storage.
Whoa!
And an octa-core Kirin 960 chipset.
Oh, that's their chipset. Yeah. Okay, that's interesting. 6 gig of RAM. It's amazing how they've crept up. I mean, these phones have got PC level.
Yeah, they've got seriously hardware. But again, you know, they know what's coming. They know that these devices are going to do so much more than just make calls and display YouTube videos or you know, run apps with augmented reality and virtual reality. These devices are going to be full on PCs that we have in our pockets. I'm looking forward to seeing it.
Yeah.
This next level of the way that we see the world through our digital devices.
Just need to do something about the batteries.
Oh, those damn batteries. If they don't blow up, they just run out.
They do. I mean, the more and more powerful processors and all the rest of it. You know, you might be able to, you know, play GTA 5 on your phone by this time next year, but what's the point if the battery lasts 5 minutes?
Oh, yeah.
Any other manufacturer? Who have we missed out?
Nokia.
Nokia, of course.
The rumored, I can't wait for this one.
3310?
Yes.
Did you ever own a 3310?
Yes, I did. I had two, if I remember correctly. And, I mean, the same nostalgia as what every other Nokia 3310 owner had. It was a great phone. Solid device.
Snake.
Yeah, Snake. Battery lasts for days, weeks.
It was the Nokia phone that introduced Snake, I think.
May have been.
I think it was.
And it was a really sexy device. I mean, the design was slick for its time. You know, really futuristic looking.
And it wasn't an expensive phone. It was aimed at the mass market.
Yes, it was aimed at the mass market.
Because it was around the time that the 6110 was out, and that was their top-end phone. That was the one in gold, if I remember. That was a beautiful device as well. The business executives used to run around town with the 6110. Oh, yeah. But the rest of us plebs were using the 3110 or something similar. But it was a great phone. It was
it felt nice in the hand. I remember that I had a dark blue one. And it was such a nice device. So now it's rumored to have or it will have a color screen. Obviously still low resolution to keep battery life optimal.
So is it going to be a feature phone still? They're not putting Android in it or anything?
I don't think they're going to be putting Android in it. I'm just looking at my notes here. But color screen, low power device.
S40.
No.
The original ran S40, right?
Oh yes, S40. Sorry, yeah. And then there was S60 for some of the other devices.
S60 was It was S40, I think, in that phone. I'm trying to remember back into the mists of time here, but I think S40 ran on those basic ones, and then S60 was more for those sort of crossover feature smartphones with keyboards and stuff.
It says you're rumored to sell for roughly 59 euros.
So about 1,000 rand.
About 1,000.
So it's certainly not cheap next to basic feature phones.
But considering how strong the Nokia brand is, I mean, most people will probably buy that as a very intro. And anybody that doesn't need a smartphone, but a feature phone would suffice.
I mean, I own a Nokia 105, which, as far as I know, they still sell. I think there may have been a successor now. And that phone costs a. I mean, even if you buy through a local or retail through a local cellular operator, where you're probably paying 30% of them, giving them 30% margin, you're still only paying about 250 for that phone. If you find a wholesale route for getting that phone, you'd probably pay about 180 for it. And that's a full functional phone, and it plays Snake.
Huh, brilliant!
Which is the most important reason, biggest reason you buy the phone.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Yeah, others, I mean, 84 by 84 display. Same price as confirmed before, as rumored before. I'm looking forward to typing your SMS with only 9 buttons to work with.
No WhatsApp. Times. No WhatsApp, I presume.
Do you remember how quick you used to type SMSs, even with the 3-press system?
Yes, indeed. Indeed. Oh, we've come a long way. We have come a long way, but I look forward to seeing it. That Nokia press conference, I think, is going to be one of the most well-attended at MWC. I think they're presenting around 4:30 or 5:30 on Sunday. I'll be watching that live stream with a great deal of interest. Oh, because yeah, they're not only introducing the 3310, of course, but they're introducing a whole range of Android-based smartphones. Now, Nokia has introduced, I think it was called the Nokia 6, which was their first one, under the license with HBD or HMD. What are they? HMD Global. Mm. That has only been on sale in China, nowhere else in the world. Now, they're announcing 3 or 4 new Android models at Mobile World Congress, and presumably at least some of those are going to be coming to South Africa.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Good times. Good times to see Nokia back in the game.
Would you buy a Nokia Android phone?
I don't have a need for it, but to be honest, tempting to buy one of those as a second device that you can use when you go out and about hiking or, yeah, you know, go traveling somewhere that you need something that you're not too worried about. I'd probably buy a Nokia over any of the other brands because, you know,
you buy the 3310 or the smartphone?
I'd probably buy a normal feature phone. Yeah. Nokia 3310 would be just a nostalgic reason to buy it. But any of the Nokias, any of the feature phones,
yes,
with a decent battery life and a nice numpad, because yes, you're not going to be necessarily typing mails or anything on it. It's just to make calls and potentially receive notifications.
Mm.
Not that I have a need for it, but it would be nice to own one, add one to the arsenal.
Yeah, indeed. Just for geek cred.
Oh, yes. Walk around with that one. I believe there's a good market for old Nokia phones on eBay as well. So most of them still work, and imagine at a business meeting whipping out an original Nokia 3210 brick. We have to put out the antenna.
Yes, yes, yes. Do you have any Nokias lying around?
No, you don't. Unfortunately, I tend to give my old phones away to people that want to use it.
I do the same, but I've still got a Nokia E61 and a E51.
I think the 51 was a great phone.
I think an E71, or was it? No, it was the E72. I've still got that around here. That was the buggiest phone Nokia ever did. Mm. It was the 61 was fantastic. Then they brought out the 71, and the 71 was just so full of errors. That software was awful. It was around the time. In fact, they brought out the E72. I think in the same year that Apple announced the iPhone.
Oh yeah, that would kill any prospects of that device.
Indeed.
But it was a nice. I really liked the direction they went in with that, with the keypad device.
Yeah. Well, they were copy. It was a clone of BlackBerry.
Oh yeah.
They were panicking about BlackBerry. That's what the E71 was, and the E61 and the E51 before it.
Mm.
Of course, they didn't really need to panic about BlackBerry because Apple killed them too.
Oh yeah. Apple killed the BlackBerry star.
So, Mobile World Congress kicks off this Sunday. We'll be back next week in this podcast, no doubt, talking about all the announcements that were made.
Oh, yes.
So, we'll give our MWC in review podcast this time next week. But let's move on to some of the other news that's happened over the last week or so. This was, I think, just over a week ago, but we didn't do a podcast last week. And that's DStv's price hikes. Rachel, did you have a chance to look at the numbers? They were quite interesting.
Yeah, they are. I mean, I'm not really worrying about it because I'm not a DStv subscriber. It's getting very expensive, and I've heard a lot of outcry from customers using it, but it's spurring them on to move to streaming services. Although there's a lot of people that still get a lot of value out of DStv, so you can't completely knock it. I'm sure licensing fees go up, but what's the price going to be at $7.59 a month?
$7.89.
$7.89 a month.
Yeah.
It's getting awfully close at 1,000 rand mark. I mean,
it is getting close. And if you're on the top end package and you want a PVR, you have to pay the access fee as well, which
to get all those PVR functionalities.
To get all the PVR functionality
and then online access with it.
The online access has now been expanded to all DStv Premium customers, so you no longer have to have that access fee. But yeah, no, it's gone up to $7.89 a month, or will go up to $7.89 a month on the 1st of April, which is an increase of 4%. So that's below inflation. But it comes on top of a huge increase last year. You'll recall this time last year when they announced these price increases that the rand had tanked thanks to Zuma and Nhlanhla Nene being fired. I think the rand was sitting at 16.50 or something. And I think MultiChoice was in a very tough position then because it buys most of its content in dollars. So they pushed their prices up quite substantially then. So they're coming down. They're coming going up by 4% for the premium customers this time around. So below inflation, but still an increase, even though the rand has improved by about 20 to 25% over the past year against the dollar.
I'm not seeing that benefit back into
the system. Certainly not seeing a price cut. But I suppose they do try and manage this every year so that they don't cut prices 1 year and then push them up 20% the next year. But 6.5% increase in the price of DStv Extra, which is the next package down. That goes to 489 Rand a month. And then DStv Compact, which is a hugely popular bouquet, that goes up to 365 Rand a month, which is a 5.8% increase. So that's close to where consumer price inflation is sitting.
And I guess,
sorry, Rehat?
No, I said, I guess the question really is, what do you get for that money if you're a cord cutter? Mm. And you do get a lot of value for your money if you want to spend that, you know, let's call it 800 Rand on content. Again, I guess not everybody's got access to streaming-capable TVs or streaming-capable devices.
Sure.
I was thinking about it the other day. You know, there is something that's quite nice about putting on your TV and not having to think about the lineup of stuff you want to watch.
Yeah.
Not that it's a big issue. It's certainly the one of the reasons why I moved away from paid for services.
But that's the problem with television is you switch your brain off.
But putting on sport, for example, it's a little bit more difficult to have 24-hour sport running.
Yeah.
You know, MTV Music Service, I guess you've got the YouTube equivalent. Yeah, it is, and you know, the stuff I've seen in the news channels.
I think the biggest pressure that MultiChoice is facing and is going to face is at the top end, the people on the premium bouquets who don't watch sport.
Mm.
Because if you're on those plans and you don't want Super Sport, you don't want to pay for Super Sport, you don't have the option of not paying for Super Sport, and you are being increasingly well-serviced by streaming services. Netflix has improved massively in recent months. Every time I fire it up now on my TV, there's a new TV show, a new series.
The library, South African library, is very good.
It's improved dramatically. I would go as far as to say that now that Netflix stands out by far from all the other competitors in the local market from a streaming perspective.
But again, you need multiple services. I still use Showmax for certain things. I mean, I've kind of been watching some older sitcoms and stuff, and Showmax has
They've got different variety. And they've got local content as well.
Coming in under 800 bucks, so for those two,
and
if I take a portion if I take a portion of my fiber connection money that I could potentially write off to the entertainment side of it, it's still a lot of value for money.
It is, and we've got real choice now because of course Amazon Prime is available locally as well. And
Have you signed up for that?
I have. I'm using it. Yeah. I thought I would cancel after. I find Jeremy Clarkson quite funny, so I signed up for the Grand Tour.
Okay.
And I've stayed watching it because they've slowly introduced other shows. Goliath, I haven't started watching it yet, but I believe it's absolutely fantastic.
And this is Amazon original content.
Goliath, I think, is an Amazon show, yes.
Apparently they've got some good titles under their banner.
Yeah, it's not as good as Netflix by any stretch of the imagination yet, but I think Jeff Bezos is spending big money, so I would expect that during the course of this year it's going to improve dramatically. But it's very cheap right now. It's in an introductory price, I think, of $2.95 a month. So it's almost
I must go check it out,
I think towards the middle of the year, they're talking about increasing the price. I don't know if they've said by how much at this stage, but $2.95 a month. And they've got Goliath, I believe, is good. We're going to start watching that hopefully in the next week.
Yeah.
And they've got a show called The Man in the High Castle, which has also got rave reviews.
I've heard about that one.
It's the plot is, you know, they ask, what if the Nazis won the war?
Yes, a little alternative history story.
I believe it's very good. And they've got some quite good movie content on there as well. So we're spoiled. Showmax is a good service. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I'm not running them down in any way. They've got good content. I just think Netflix is ahead of them right now in terms of what they're offering in the South African store, especially in terms of original content.
Yes.
There's great original content on Netflix. And Amazon I would put in third place, just because they have a real lack of content on there at the moment. But it's showing signs of improving quickly.
Oh, yeah.
And they have to. If they're going to put their price up in the middle of the year, then they're going to have to jack up their content before then.
Definitely. And I have to put YouTube on that. I mean, even though you don't pay for it, I've been discovering some really amazing full-length documentaries and in programming.
If YouTube Red came here, I'd pay for it in a heartbeat.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Just no, we get, had this discussion.
Just to get rid of those ads.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, for music purposes, I would love to pay and just to play the music videos. I'm a big fan of, or I was a big fan of putting on MTV and VH1 in the background.
Yes.
When I had DSTV. That was one of the reasons why I love DSTV so much.
I mean, I'm already a Google Play Music subscriber. I pay 60 rand a month for that. I'm very pleased to see that the music services give us here in the third world discounted prices, because in the States you pay $10 a month for that. So I'm already a subscriber there. And if you're in America and you subscribe to YouTube Red, which is, I think, $10 a month, you get Google Play Music thrown in for free.
Good value.
It's for great value. Great value. Yeah. Of course, Amazon Prime Video is thrown in for free if you've got an Amazon Prime account in the US or the UK.
Yeah. Add-on services, built-on services.
So I think you pay $99 a year, you get free priority delivery on Amazon orders, plus you get a whole bunch of value-added services, including Prime Video for free.
I'm sure we'll get Amazon here soon, Duncan. Yeah. It's coming. We can buy our toilet paper online.
God, wait. I buy my dog food through Takealot, so I'm primed and ready.
Mm-hmm.
Primed and ready. I would actually buy my toilet paper through Takealot too, but they don't have a good price.
I've checked it out.
I have.
I rest my case.
Household groceries. It's the bane of my life. If I don't have to spend 2 hours on a Saturday morning shopping at Checkers or Shit Pick and Pay or something, I could do it in front of my computer and say, oh, would you like to reorder these? Yes, please.
Yeah.
Have it delivered.
Look, I've certainly found a lot of use in buying my beer online, you know, not having to go to the shop. It's amazing. It lands at your door.
You can just lie on your couch and they just bring you beer.
Exactly. And soon it'll be with a drone, so they can even pour it for you.
Yeah, and those craft beers are a bit heavy though. The drone might crash the drone. Anyway, what were we talking about?
The DSTV price hikes.
Oh, DSTV. We digressed. Yeah. So I think at that top end, that really sort of premium end where people have fiber broadband at home, I think you find people are saying, well, actually, do I really need to be subscribing to this anymore?
And they'll have the smart TV or the Apple TV potentially.
They will. Absolutely. At that top end.
A lot of these services come built into your TV now. I mean, I don't have one. I still hook up a computer.
Yes.
And I like the functionality.
I prefer. I've actually got a full-on Windows PC connected to my TV, and I actually prefer it. It's
a big one. What have you got in that machine?
It's a Core i7 and et cetera. Nice. I like having a full PC connected to my TV because it allows me to do all sorts of things.
Exactly. You're not limited by some...
It runs a Plex server. It's you know, I can run software-based VPNs on it. I can just use a web browser to access all of these streaming services. I don't have to rely on an app running on a TV that might be a bit flaky.
And on that note, I see Showmax has changed their layout, the look and feel, to look a lot more like Netflix now.
Yes.
So yes. That was and it works well. It works much better than the old interface that on a big screen on a browser.
Right. That's DSTV. We'd love to get your thoughts, actually. Have you cancelled your DSTV subscription? Do you keep your DSTV subscription? Why do you do that? What are your thoughts? Which streaming service are you subscribing to? Which ones do you like? Which ones don't you like? Send us a mail. We'd love to hear from you. info@techcentral.co.za. Good. So you're going to be buying shares in Snapchat?
I might have to. I don't use the service. I've tried to use the service, but I think I'm just out of the bracket of understanding the technology.
Yeah, no, I'm the same. I think we're just past the age where you can actually, we have brains that can figure it out. But one thing I'm not going to be doing is buying shares. I think that this is a disaster waiting to happen, actually. Maybe I'm too old to get it.
It worked for Facebook as a social media platform to go public, so...
It did, but Facebook is very different. Sure. This is potentially a... this is potentially a, what's the word, not fly-by-night operation. It's potentially something that consumers are going to have fun with and then say, oh, actually, I'm bored of this now. Let's move on to the next thing. And Facebook, I think, is a very real threat to Snapchat because they're rapidly integrating a lot of the features of Snapchat into their own products, especially into Instagram. I mean, the stories that they've introduced into Instagram were a real clone of what Snapchat does. Yeah. They're introducing some features into WhatsApp now. They're testing them in WhatsApp in some markets where you have disappearing images, which is, I mean, a pure clone of Snapchat. If I was Snapchat.
And more accessible to people like us who don't have to switch to another platform. Yes. We've already got an audience on these.
Yes.
So, yeah, you're right. Very real threat.
So, you know, what's the, and you know, Snapchat's model is making money from advertising, really? I mean, they're appealing to a market that isn't as wealthy as the market that appeals to Facebook and Instagram. We're talking youngsters here who don't have the spending power necessarily. I mean, sure, there is a market therefore for marketers who are trying to advertise certain types of products. I mean, I'd imagine that you know, consumer products like KFC or Coca-Cola or those sort of things might find value in the platform, but you know, going to market put possible valuation north of $20 billion, which would put it above Twitter.
I guess they need to make. I guess the investors need to make money, and you know, people want to make money off it. It's always more money to make.
Yeah, what's not encouraging is that the top management team will be selling shares as part of the IPO, which doesn't instill the greatest amount of confidence.
Oh yeah.
When the management team says, "Okay, we're going to offload a big chunk of shares at listing, cash out," what do they know?
Maybe they just want to go on vacation.
Anyway, maybe I'm just old and cynical, but I won't be buying Snapchat shares.
Yeah.
Speaking of shares, we have a new stock exchange in South Africa. First time in over 50 years.
Wow.
It's called ZARX. And I met their chief technology officer earlier in the week and actually recorded a podcast with him. It was a fascinating discussion. It was... they launched, I think it was a Monday morning, they listed their first share, a company called Senves. They're in effect one of those old agricultural co-ops that's modernized. And the first trade took place right after the market opened. I think it was at 9 a.m. And the full trade was settled in 10 seconds. And this is the selling point of ZARX. If you buy a share on the JSE, you have to wait what's called T plus three. There's a T plus three settlement cycle, which means you have to wait a minimum of 4 days before you get your money in your bank account. I'm not sure the reason why there's such a delay. It used to be T plus five, meaning 6 days settlement. And recently they introduced T plus three settlement through Straight, which is the, how would you describe them? They manage the settlement of shares, electronic settlement of shares. Very specialist company. ZARX also works through Straight, but they're doing immediate settlement, real-time settlement. So you buy a share from someone else, and the money changes hands immediately, and it's settled immediately. They say this is much less risky than, in fact, the T+3 settlement that the JSE does. But they're, of course, pitching it as their one of their principal selling points. And they're saying that they wouldn't have been able to do what they are doing at the cost that they're doing it. Today, launching a stock exchange electronically, an electronic cloud-based, in effect, stock exchange. They wouldn't have been able to do this 5 years ago in South Africa because the data centers weren't here and the fiber wasn't here. So they're taking advantage of the fact that there's all this open access fiber in the ground, and then that there are multiple data centers that have been built and they can build redundancy into that system. They don't actually have any data center facilities in their offices. I went to their offices in Bryanston. It's like an ordinary office.
The cloud.
And it's all online, completely electronic exchange. Fascinating podcast. Anyway, if you're interested in markets and just interested in how technology is upending industries, I'd suggest going to have a look at that. If you don't haven't come across our new Tech Central podcast, by the way, I recommend going to subscribe to it. You can get it through your favorite podcatcher. Pocket Cast is the one we recommend here. It's really, really good software. It's not free, but it's probably the best I've seen, certainly on Android. And it's also available on iOS and Windows Phone if you're one of the holdouts on that platform. and it's also, there's also a web-based version. You have to pay for each version separately, and they give good reason for that. They say they've got development teams working on each of the platforms, and they want to fund it. You know, if you find value in it. They also have a web app, which I find very useful, which I paid for. Which really allows you to manage your podcasts from your desktop, from a Windows browser. What was I saying? Oh, yeah, the Tech Central podcast. we're doing interviews, probably an average one or two a week. Did one this morning with Reshad Shah, who is heading up SquidNet, which is the new Internet of Things network. It's being built by Dark Fiber Africa. Also a fascinating discussion. They've rolled out the network now in Gauteng, and they are encouraging developers to get into contact with them, because they've got free hardware dev kits that they'll ship to developers who are interested in building solutions for their IoT network. So they're shipping out, as I understand it, I think it's Arduino boards. There might be some black, Raspberry Pi boards as well that they ship out that are that have the chips built into them to connect to the IoT network. And they're challenging developers to build IoT solutions for the South African market.
Nice.
So if you're a developer and you're listening to the show, do check out that podcast, specifically the interview with Reshad Shah, and find out the details about how you can get one of those free kits from them and maybe
that's
do some
brilliant,
dev.
Brilliant
yeah.
stuff.
It's great stuff, isn't it? Yeah. So that's the podcast. You can also get it in iTunes now. They finally accepted it into the iTunes store after several weeks of delay of waiting.
Nice.
So if you're looking for our podcast, simply go into your favorite podcatcher or into iTunes and search for Tech Central. Simple as that. And you'll find both podcasts there. Talk Central, which is this podcast, which Rachel and myself try to record every Friday. We don't always get it right. And, of course, the Tech Central podcast, which is our new podcast. And we'll be pushing out probably around two podcasts, aiming for about two podcasts a week, and trying to only interview really interesting people on really interesting current topics. If you've got feedback on that show or on this show, we'd always love to hear from you. Let us know our email address. We read all of your emails, info@techcentral.co.za. So let's move on to our regular features. Our winner and loser of the week. Rachad, I've chosen our winner this week, and that is...
It's a good winner.
It's a good winner. The ZA Central Registry. They are the company, organization, that manages the .co.za domain. They also recently launched the .durban, .joburg, and Cape Town domains.
Yeah, yeah.
Have you registered any domains on those geographic
Not yet. I'm looking forward to this one that's upcoming, .africa, but I haven't really had a need in any of my little projects to do the
Joburg
city
ones,
or the city-based ones.
Yeah.
But I'm a big fan of URLs. I own a lot of them. I buy a lot of them.
I spend a lot of money on URLs, actually. Yeah, I think I own techcentral.joburg, actually.
Nice.
Registered.
It's I can see a lot of benefit in it. But they're a little bit pricey. I mean, you need to be sure of the business you're launching around them. Even for some of the commercial companies that I work with, it's not really, .co.za is sufficient for that. But again, I can see the benefit in having one of those. But .africa is certainly one to keep an eye on.
Anyway, they've finally been given, I forget the technical term, and I don't have the story in front of me, so forgive me, Mike Silber. I know you you listen to the podcast, and of course, Mike is a director. I think he's a director. I think it's the title at ICANN, the Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers, I think. ICANN. Has wanted to award this to the ZA Central Registry for some time, the .africa top-level domain. And there's been a bit of a legal battle going on with a Kenyan organization called .connect Africa, a very complex, arcane legal process that's been going on for many years. Anyway, the .connect Africa folks have lost that case, and the domain has now been assigned, if that's the right word, to the ZACR, and they are soon going to begin the process of allocating .africa domains. There's going to be the various phases where they launch this. The first phase will allow you to, I think it's the sunrise phase, they call
it. Yeah, the sunrise phase.
Where they, you as a, if you own the copyright or the intellectual property around a particular brand, like, you know, we own Tech Central, we'd be able to submit our claims to that early in the process, presumably by submitting our copyright information, our IP applications to the copyright office, to the ZACR, and then they would allocate that to us in that early phase of the project. And then later on, still this year, they're then going to open it up to all applicants who are interested. Anyone can go and register a domain. We don't know how much they're going to cost yet. Hopefully they're not too expensive.
I'm sure they'll be up there with the .joburg, .cape town.
Probably.
Will be out. It'll be quite a prominent URL to get.
It is, yes. And there's going to be big demand. I've got no doubt that I think this is going to be much bigger than the demand for the city's domains. If you have any, you already plan to register, Rachel, do not mention them on this podcast.
Africa.Africa.
My.Africa.
My.Africa.
That's going to be one of the first to go, right?
Yeah.
My.Africa. It's worth actually sitting down and giving some serious thought to some nice domains.
Yeah, you just have to be quick on the draw with this.
You do.
Get your business in first if you own that copyright, like you said. But
You have as a business, you have to do that.
Think of some creative uses for that. I'm sure there will be some interesting name combinations. I love the idea. Oh, I'm a big fan of new domains extensions at least.
Yeah. But you could get some nice vanity URLs as well, like Rechard in Africa.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
So they're our winner this week, ZA Central Registry, for finally prevailing on that that legal battle and getting the assignment, if that's the right word. I know there are specific words that ICANN uses, deliberately uses, so I'm probably butchering them. But the long and short of it is that the .Africa top level domain will be available soon if you want to register a domain. Our loser this week is the former CEO of Eskom, Brian Molefe. He was sworn in this week as an MP after saying just a couple of months ago when he resigned from Eskom under a cloud of association with the Guptas, etc., that he was going to leave Eskom and focus on clearing his name. I'm not quite sure how becoming an MP is going to help him clear his name, but here we go.
It's a very sad development of events there.
Anyway, the rumor is that he might be the next deputy finance minister or possibly even finance minister.
Oh, my goodness.
That the current minister or deputy minister may be on the way out. I think everyone knows the background to this and the shenanigans going on behind the scenes and the split within the ruling party between the guys who want to do the right thing and the guys who are trying to loot the state. Let's leave that one there. He's our loser of the week, Brian Molefe. Rechard, what's your pick this week?
So I've got a little pick popped up in my timeline. It was actually launched last year, and I've really been enjoying listening to this. Now, I'm sure you know of the artist called Moby. He launched about 4 hours worth of what he calls calm sleep music. But I use this kind of ambient music. I'm a big fan of having ambient music for when I work or when I'm trying to be a bit relaxed, in my home office, just trying to figure out a project or doing something like that. I don't do yoga or any of these things that he's actually written the music for, but I find this collection really interesting and really, up there with the high quality ambient music that I like to listen to. I'm Moby launching 4 hours. It's available. We'll put the link in the show notes, but moby.com/LA1. And I'll play you a little snippet of one of the tunes. I'm not sure if you do any of this thing when you work or when you're trying to be in a nice space. I've got a good playlist of kind of music across all genres that I like to listen to.
I find, funnily enough, when I need to write and I need to concentrate, I fire up Iron Maiden.
And you like the louder stuff.
I do like the louder stuff. But particularly Iron Maiden. I don't know. There's something about the beat, something about the pace of the drumming. And I turn the volume up, I put headphones on, and the words just flow.
Yeah. I guess I can also do it sometimes, but the majority of the music that I enjoy for that kind of it's kind of more relaxing music. So let me just turn this up to give you an idea. You can download all 4 music, all 4 hours, or you can listen to it on Spotify. But it's really tranquil kind of sounds.
You sure you don't do yoga?
No. My wife does, but I don't bend that way. But she also pointed this out to me, which is actually why I saw it. And then I did some research and I realized that this was actually released last year.
Okay.
And she's also loving it for that reason. Mm. Yeah, it's just kind of spiritual, tranquil music. As you can hear, might sound weird out of context if you're just listening to 10 seconds. But if you have it on in the background, it helps focus the mind.
Wow.
I feel wiser already. with a good audio setup, which I have, the sound's really good, and it's not something you focus on. Where if you listen to, You know, nice loud rock music, you can focus on part of the music while you work. Where this is, you actually tune out the music. It's just
more relaxation, yeah.
More like white noise, you know.
I should try it, actually. I've been struggling to sleep lately.
Yeah, and apparently it works well for that, too. So, Moby's sleep playlist.
All right, so I'll try the Megadeth with my cornflakes and a bit of Moby when I'm trying to go to bed.
Oh, maybe sounds totally normal, Duncan.
All right, my pick this week is an audiobook, actually. I've been getting through quite a few of these lately, mainly because I've reached my maximum 6 credits on Audible, so I'm having to listen to some books, otherwise I'm going to lose money. But it's actually a very good book, and I went to listen to this guy at Investec a couple of weeks ago. His name is Mark Goodman. He's a former New York police officer, and he's reinvented himself as a cybersecurity guru. I think I might have mentioned him actually last week's podcast when I spoke about Dashlane, the password management tool, which I'm still thoroughly enjoying, by the way. So he wrote a book called Future Crimes. It's about a year old now, I think, but I'm still very current. And absolutely fascinating. This book will leave you paranoid. It's impeccably researched. He talks about he talks about virus writers, he talks about hackers, he talks about the Internet of Things, he talks about just about everything in technology from a cyber crime point of view, a cyber security point of view. Goes into incredible detail about the dark net, about online criminal networks, about bank hacking, about all the different ways criminals, you know, try to access online bank accounts, try to access your online services. And, you know, it's the reason I started using Dashlane and why I'm really securing my online life. Because the stuff that's going on out there is actually quite
scary.
Yeah. And this book, you know, a lot of what's in this book I've already kind of knew. It's, you know, it's stuff you read in the tech press. It's stuff you hear about. But you always get it in snippets. You never get it in a concentrated form where you really get a detailed insight, a detailed view of just how at risk you are online if you're not practicing certain safe computing practices. And this book is long. It's over 20 hours. Very well read. And fascinating. If you're in the IT industry, a lot of the stuff that's in this book you will already be aware of. But what it does is it pulls it all together, and it perhaps talks about things that you kind of know about, but you don't perhaps give enough thought to. You know, the classic example is having the same password for multiple online services. It is a terrible, terrible idea. If you've got the same password across your Microsoft, your Google, your Amazon, etc. accounts, stop listening to this podcast right now and change your passwords. It's a major, major risk. And I know a lot of people do that. I did it. I was guilty of it. And you mustn't do it. Yeah. This book has made that very clear to me. But not just about password management. It talks about safe practices more broadly. What type of apps you should install. What you should watch out for when you're installing an app on your Android phone, for example. You know, you shouldn't be simply allowing all of these permissions.
Yeah.
And I've started doing that. I install an app, you know, and it asks me, I want access to your contacts. And you just say, no, deny. And if it says, oh, sorry, this app doesn't work without access, then uninstall
it. It's not worth it.
And there's plenty of these things out there, and you don't even think about it. You think about, you install a wallpaper manager on your phone, and wants access to my contacts, okay, whatever. You know, give it access to my contacts, give it access to my internet connection, give it access to my camera. What's it actually need all this access for?
Yeah.
And, you know, this book, I think, has opened my mind to some of these things, and I'm simply not going to allow these things to access these services. Because they don't need access to them.
Mm-hmm. I mean, today's connected world, we need to be so cautious. And it's another level of security we need to add, not just a password manager, but actual common sense or at least a heightened sense of security that we need to enforce with our digital lives.
I think that's the message this book brings home, which is what makes it so good, is it you're right. You've got to be thinking about security all the time when you're on the internet. Don't go for the easiest option when setting up. Don't go for the easiest password. Enable two-factor authentication if it allows it. And Microsoft and Google, by the way, You simply install an app on your phone now when you want to log into a new device.
Facebook does it as well, like a code generator.
Oh, I'm going to set it up with Facebook. I haven't done that yet. No. Steam does it. It's a little app that sits on your phone, and you know, whenever you log into a new device, you simply pick up your phone, hit the approve button, or it gives you a code that you type in onto your browser, whatever you're trying to connect.
So important. And it works well.
It works well. It really is going to stop almost every attempt to hack your account. Mm. Even if the attacker has your password, he can't get in.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's a great book. I highly recommend it. It's a long book, over 20 hours, but very good.
And I assume you can also buy this as a physical book. I mean, this is probably available in South Africa.
It's available as a physical book as well. Okay. The Audible is very good, though.
Does it draw you in with the narration?
It's well read.
Excellent. I'll look out for that.
Great stuff. I think that's our show, Rehat. We just need to do our quiz results.
Indeed. Shall I get the first one?
Sure, go for it.
Dark Fiber Africa subsidiary Squidnet has switched on its Internet of Things network in Gauteng. It is using technology from which French company? And the answer there is Sigfox.
Sigfox, what a strange name. The second question, MultiChoice has expanded access to its DStv Now online streaming service. Which DStv subscribers can now access it? And the answer is all DStv premium subscribers. Premium subscribers. There are over 60 channels on there. Previously, it was only people who had a PVR, an active PVR, who could access it, but they've broadened it now.
It's quite nice. Mm. The third question, and this was really exciting news. I'm very fascinated by this. How many Earth-sized planets have been discovered orbiting a nearby star? And for a bonus point, we wanted to know, what is the system called? The answer there is 7 Earth-like planets, and the system is TRAPPIST-1.
TRAPPIST-1. Oh, what a cool story. And it's, 39 light years away?
Yeah, only 39 light years. And it takes you a lifetime to get there, but... Yeah, but teeming with prospects.
The scientists, I mean, I've been reading quite a few articles about this, and they're suggesting that this is the best candidate now to look for alien life.
Yeah.
It's in our neighborhood, and it's close enough that we could potentially, you know, if there's intelligent life there, we could communicate it with radio signals over a 39-year period.
Exactly. And what made me very excited is they also said the scientists are now can more accurately predict that there are a lot more of these systems closer by than what we'd expected. We may even find some others in a nearby system.
It is inevitable that there's life in the universe.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt, without a doubt.
And I actually now think, given the current advances in the pace of science and astronomy and telescopes, that there's a good chance that we're going to find alien life
within our lifetime. Oh, it's so exciting, man. Brings out the inner trick in all of us.
Yeah. I don't think we're going to be meeting green aliens, but I think we'll prove definitively that there is life on the surface of another planet before we die. And even if it's just plant life that we can, you know. And there's new space telescopes going up. The Hubble Space Telescope is going to be replaced with something called the James Webb Space Telescope, which is going to be like 10 times more powerful, or even more powerful.
Not your average phone camera.
No. And these new telescopes are the ability to study the atmospheres of planets orbiting other stars is going to allow us to actually identify which ones have got plant life and possibly even animal life on, based on what's in the atmospheres. And then presumably sometime in the next couple of hundred years, we'll be in a position as a species to send spacecraft to those planets to find out
everything. And look at what Elon Musk is doing with SpaceX and artificial intelligence and the battery technology.
Mm.
It's exciting times for us to send our probes into the universe.
It is. Reminds me, actually, the follow-up to the book I recommended a couple of weeks ago, if anyone's read it, We Are Legion, We Are Bob, my favorite sci-fi book in years. The sequel's coming out in a couple of weeks.
Oh, nice.
So I'm really looking forward to that. It's going to be my next book. Right, we were with a quiz, weren't we? next question. Who is stepping down this month as chairman of Ultron, marking the end of an era? And that is, of course, Bill Fenter, who founded Ultron 51 years
ago. Wow. That was before the smartphone.
It was.
The fifth question. ZARX, a new technology-based stock exchange, has been launched in South Africa. Which company was the first to list on the exchange? And as we mentioned, the answer is Senwes.
And that's our show. As always, info@techcentral.co.za is our email address, and we'd love to hear from you. Let us know what you think of the show, what you like, what you don't like. Drop us a mail, and we do read all of them, we promise. So until next time, our post-Mobile World Congress wrap-up show, which will be next Friday, from Rehat and myself, cheers.
Ciao, ciao.